Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the inner sanctum. We offer you escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Radio Thin.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination with theater of the mind.
You know, TN Radio Thin.
The special 3-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wilkins.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater Program 232 in the series. This is November 12, 2017. To my right, the vivacious and effervescent Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
And we have Mike Estella in the studio as well. What's up, Mike?
Hey, hello,
hey.
Everybody.
And we have DJ Cash, our producer, in the booth.
Hey, guys. Come on.
So happy you're with us. Thank
so
you.
So things are going to go smooth as silk. And we have classic radio shows. I thought we'd do classic radio tonight. What do you think?
We could change things up.
Yeah,
and
change
do
it up.
Classic radio.
Yeah. We have the Burns and Allen show from 1945. Then it's Boston Blackie, Good Detective Adventure. And then a scary mystery on the Hall of Fantasy. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School. Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the upcoming animated film Disenchanted, the sequel to the 2007 film Enchanted, about a princess who accidentally found herself in the live-action world.
Okay.
We have a great prize tonight. It is a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time.
TreeTimeTreeTime.com.
Everything
Christmas at TreeTime.
There's no at, just TreeTime.com.
TreeTime.com.
Oh, yeah.
No at?
No, everything
right.
Christmas.
Well, that is a great prize. In fact, I'd like to win one of those.
Well, call in.
Who do I have to talk to win
Sarah,
one of those?
She knows
all
everyone.
Right. Okay, so if you know the answer, here's a hint. 312-981-7200 is the number. She was Charlene in The Fighter.
Like, he's a grown man. He can think for himself.
All right. Great actress. Love this actress. 312-981-7200. Who is that?
This is Hour 1 of the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
Like, he's a grown man. He can think for himself.
Glenn, how are you?
All right. Excellent.
Great, great. Thanks for calling in. Who is that actress that Carl is oogling over?
Amy Adams
is right, Glenn. We are so happy to give you this amazing gift. It's a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree. It's from Tree Time on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. You get to choose the theme of your choice. And we love Tree Time. It's everything Christmas, treetime.com. Right?
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling in and for listening in on our WGN Radio Theater tonight.
Okay, thank you very much.
Take care.
Thanks, Glenn. All right. Well, I want to remind all of our listeners, we have a text in line. We love getting your texts. It's 312-981-7200. Any questions about the show, any comments you want to make, if there's any classic radio shows you would like to hear. And you know what? We've had quite a few people, and Mike can attest to this, texting in and emailing us and asking us, are we going to have some Thanksgiving shows for Thanksgiving, and are we going to have some Christmas shows during December?
What do you think?
The answer is no.
The answer is absolutely, because we listen to our listeners,
yeah.
And we love to play what you want to hear.
In fact, we'll have a whole month of Christmas shows. The entire month of December will be holiday themed and Christmas shows. And then we have some shows for Thanksgiving coming up. Now, am I coming over to your house for Thanksgiving or to Mike's house? Who am I?
Mike's house.
Whose house am I eating
You're
at?
You're going to Mike's house, yes. For sure.
Mike?
Well, come early so that you can help me make the food.
You trust me in your kitchen with knives?
Well, I mean, I'm going to need some help, so.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
He's a brave man.
Yeah, I'm really busy that weekend.
Are you making a whole soiree of kinds of shindig food, everything?
I'm not making anything, personally.
You're going to
attend my mother-in-law's Thanksgiving
that's
shindig.
That's even easier. You're going by somebody's house.
Yeah. And
well, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to find someone's house to go over to.
Yeah, Mike.
Actually, I'm going to go by my sister Carlene's house.
Okay,
she's
going to
make she makes an awesome Thanksgiving dinner. And I'll see my mom and have some great turkey and all the trimmings.
It's all about family.
All right. Well, you know what? It's time to listen to the Burns and Allen Show. This is an October 18th, 1945 episode. Is Meredith Wilson getting engaged? Let's find out. Here's part one of the Burns and Allen Show.
It's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. Maxwell House, America's favorite coffee, brings you a new series of programs featuring the domestic adventures of that lovable Mr. and Mrs. George and Gracie. With yours truly, Bill Goodwin, the Les Paul Trio, and the music of Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. Well, the doorbell at the Burns house just sounded, and Gracie is opening the front door to admit an old friend.
Good morning, Missy Burns. Here's your mail.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Postman. And how are you this lovely day?
Oh, simply glorious, Mrs. Burns. The crisp tang of this fall air fills me with the joy of living. The voice within me cries out, "You're alive! You're alive!"
Yes, and you are, too.
It's a shame that on such a magnificent day I should bring you such dreadful news. Oh, poor Mr. Wilson.
Poor Mr. You mean Meredith Wilson?
Yes, such a nice man. And so young, too.
But what is it? Is Meredith ill?
I'm afraid it's even worse.
Mr. Postman, you don't mean...
Yes, he's going to get married.
Married? Meredith? Who is he going to marry?
I don't know. Some girl.
Oh, how wonderful. That's what he always wanted to marry. Oh, this is thrilling, Mr. Postman. But it's almost unbelievable. Meredith is so shy and bashful. He's so afraid of a woman.
Wait till he gets married. He doesn't know what fear is yet.
Now, Mr. Postman, you shouldn't be so dead set against marriage just because yours turned out so, well, shall we say, unfortunately?
Yes, let's say that. It's mild, but let's say it.
Well, I think marriage is wonderful, and I've been married for 10 years, half my life.
Really?
Certainly. And Meredith will be happy, too. No one was ever meant to go through life alone, Mr. Postman. There's a mate somewhere for everyone.
I suppose that's true.
Well, of course it is. Every human being on Earth should marry another human being.
I guess that's where I made my mistake.
I've got to rush in now and tell my husband the big news. He'll be just as excited as I am.
Well, goodbye, Mrs. Burns. Remember, keep smiling.
George! Oh, George!
Yeah? What's the excitement?
Oh, I just heard the most thrilling news. Guess who's getting married? Meredith Wilson.
Meredith Wilson?
Uh-huh.
Gosh, that's wonderful. But how did he ever propose? I didn't think he had nerve enough to talk to a girl.
George, a man doesn't have to talk when he proposes to a girl.
No?
Well, of course not. All he has to do is get down on his knees. If he doesn't pull out a pair of dice, she knows what he wants.
I guess so. Well, gee, this is great news.
Isn't it? Oh, I'm so excited. I just love weddings. George.
Yes?
Let's get married.
Gracie, we are married.
I know, I mean again. Lots of people do, just for the fun of it.
Oh, Gracie, you mean buy a license and everything?
Well, sure, I'll give you the $2 again.
It isn't that. It's kind of silly.
Oh, but George, it'll be much more fun getting married this time. After all, the first time I hardly knew you.
Yeah, we were strangers.
Sure. But now I regard you as practically one of the family.
Thanks, kid. Now forget it. Only Meredith is getting married, not us.
Oh. All right, dear. Maybe it's better that way because then you can sing.
You mean sing at Meredith's wedding?
Well, certainly. What could be more inspiring to a young couple starting on life's great adventure than the sound of your golden voice singing, I love you truly.
I love you truly. Truly, dear. Life with its sorrow. Life with its fear.
Oh, you're perfect for a wedding. Perfect. That voice has orange blossoms in it.
I love you truly. Orange blossoms in it.
Oh, absolutely. I can smell every note.
Oh, come on. Let's go over and we'll tell Bill Goodwin the news.
Take me there on wings of song, Sugar Throat.
I love you truly. Oh. George and Gracie, come in.
Well, Bill, we've come to tell you the most wonderful news.
What is it?
Well, something that's going to make two people blissfully happy. George, give them a hint.
I love you truly. Truly, dear. No, it'd never work, George. There's too much difference in our ages.
Going to get married to a girl.
Meredith Wilson? Oh, I don't believe it, Gracie. He's never even kissed a girl.
Well, Bill, all men aren't as forward as you. George didn't kiss me right away either.
That's right.
In fact, I remember the first time George kissed me. We've been back from our honeymoon about a week.
Forget it. Believe me, Meredith is even shyer than George. You know, I double-dated with him one night, and when the girl said, when we do, I said, let's go up on Observatory Hill, where it's nice and dark, and count the stars. What happened? Meredith got up to 2,400,000. I'll bet you aren't counting stars, huh, Bill?
Shucks, no, George. I took my girl for a walk. Walk down the old Ox Road.
Yeah.
Lucky girl. Imagine walking down the old Ox Road with the old ox himself.
Well, I still can't believe that bashful Meredith is getting married.
Why don't we go over to Meredith's house and check up on this?
Well, yeah, let's go. By the way, Bill, if it's true, you'll be the only single one left.
Well, that suits me.
Now, Bill, wouldn't you like to settle down like George?
Not that far down, no.
Let's go and see Meredith.
Well, hi, folks.
Meredith, is it true? Are you going to get married?
Yep. I guess I am, all right.
Oh, no.
Well, thanks.
Now, Meredith, you're rather young and innocent, and I think it would be a good idea for a man who's wiser and more experienced to have a little talk with you.
Yes. Sit down, Meredith.
You too, George, and don't miss a word Bill says.
Now, Meredith, my boy, as soon as the wedding is over, get your bride away from the crowd.
Yeah, he's right. That's what George did.
Yes. Now, rush her to your car and drive straight to your honeymoon cottage.
That's what George did.
Pick her up in your arms and carry her across the threshold.
Go on, Bill.
There you are, the two of you alone in your little love nest, your beautiful bride in your arms.
Oh, boy.
Do I put her down now? Oh, certainly not. You carry her right through the living room, through the dining room, and into the kitchen. The kitchen, where you make a nice big pot of Maxwell House coffee. Ah, what a perfect way to toast a happy marriage. After all, a happy marriage is the result of a perfect blend of personalities. Maxwell House, too, is the result of a perfect blend. That's why more people buy and enjoy Maxwell House than any other brand of coffee in the world.
All right, Bill, we've had a cup of coffee. Now what?
Well, now...
Yeah?
You have another cup. Maxwell House is so delicious, almost everybody wants a second cup. It has more flavor. More flavor in the blend because of the choice Latin American coffees, which are skillfully combined in Maxwell House. And more flavor in the cup because of Radiant Roast, which uniformly develops the richness, mellowness, and full-bodied flavor of every coffee bean.
Okay, Bill. Now, we've had two cups of coffee. Now what?
Well, now,
the coffee pot is empty, Bill.
You better empty the jar, too, if you want to get out of the kitchen.
The coffee pot and the jar are empty. Now what?
Now, you walk over to your bride, put your arm around her, and whisper tenderly in her ear.
What do I whisper?
Well, you say, darling, would you run down to the store and get another jar of Maxwell House?
That's what Josh did.
Well, sure, Gracie, because Maxwell House is coffee that's full-flavored best, good to the last drop.
We know, Bill. There's nothing finer nor more friendly. But Meredith can't just sit there and drink coffee forever. His wife might divorce him.
She'd certainly have the grounds.
She's
the girl who sells ribbon at the dyer store. I've been in love with her for a year now.
Oh, what's her name?
I don't know.
You don't know her name?
Huh. I've never gotten up nerve enough to ask her.
Well, how did you propose to her?
Well, I haven't yet. Every day I think I will. But when I get there, I lose my nerve and I just buy a yard of blue ribbon.
Oh, murder. You've been after the girl for a year, and what have you got to show for it?
I got 300 yards of blue ribbon.
Well, that's very handy. No married couple should be without it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Furniture they don't need.
No.
A house is nothing. But got to have at least a few hundred yards of blue ribbon.
Oh, yeah. Now, boy.
But a home without ribbon.
Yeah. It takes a heap of ribbon to make a house a home.
Now, stop making fun of Meredith.
Who knows? After a year, you may even have a little string running around the house.
Why, sure.
All right, that's the first portion of the Burns and Allen Show, October 18th, 1945, with Meredith engaged.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hey, Roger, do you like the cinnamon bear?
I love the cinnamon
bear. I know, I love the cinnamon bear, too. We're not going to be playing the cinnamon bear, but I have the next best thing, Roger.
Oh, my gosh. What?
Throughout the month of November, anybody that listens to this show can order the Cinnamon Bear digitally remastered. If you hear the quality, you've never heard the quality of the Cinnamon Bear the way we have it because we have licensed it from the actual the granddaughter of the – I'm trying to think, is it the grand – no, it's the daughter of the man who created it, Glanville Heisch. He wrote it, and it aired originally in 1937, and we licensed it from Glanville Heisch's daughter, and we got the master transcription recordings, and we gave that to Mike. He had a lab make the digital transfer, right, Mikey?
Yep.
And then Mike did his magic. So we have it available, the entire 26-chapter Cinnamon Bear serial. We offer it normally throughout the year for $19.99, but it's available throughout the month of November for half price, $9.99.
What?
Are you nuts?
Yes, I am nuts. All 26 chapters. I think it's about 6.5 hours long. Brilliant sound quality. You've never heard this quality like this. It's amazing. And you just go to ClassicRadioStore.com, ClassicRadioStore.com. So every month we take two collections and we lower the price by 50%. So we have the Cinnamon Bear. And we also have Suspense, Volume 1, so 12 half-hour episodes of Suspense. And on that collection of Suspense, we have Bela Lugosi, Orson Welles, Mary Astor, Paul Lucas, many others. 12 half-hour episodes of Suspense, Volume 1, regularly $19.99, yours for $9.99 throughout the month of November. But December 1, they go back up to the regular price. So
get them now.
So get them now. And I know you love the Cinnamon Bear.
Yes, I do.
And everybody loves the Cinnamon Bear. It's a holiday classic.
It is.
And you know what's cool? That show originally aired from Thanksgiving through Christmas. So if you buy it for your kids or your grandkids, mm-hmm. you can play one episode every day from Thanksgiving to Christmas, just like it was originally aired. They're about 14 minutes apart.
So you gotta order now
in order to
get it in time.
Yeah, well, you get it right away. It's digitally downloaded.
Oh, that's right.
You instantly
look
get
at you,
it.
Mr. Modern Age Computer Person.
Well, thanks to Mike and to Lisa.
Well, okay, congratulations and thanks to Mike and Lisa.
Yeah.
Carl, forget it.
Roger just wasn't listening.
Yeah, so go to Classic. So, Roger, check it out. Go to Classic Radio Store. .com and get those two collections this month only, half price.
That's great.
Okay, time now for the conclusion to the Burns and Allen Show.
I've heard of bashful guys, but Meredith Wilson takes the cake.
He certainly does.
Imagine being in love with a girl for a year and not having a word to say.
Well, that was ridiculous. It's only after marriage that a man doesn't have a word to say.
Not true.
Come in.
Hi, folks.
Meredith, you should save yourself. I'm a wolf. I'm an irresistible wolf. Go on, try.
I'm a wolf. I'm an irresistible wolf.
Well, let's try something else.
Do women really like those bold fellows?
Oh, certainly. The rough, domineering Humphrey Bogart type of man. As a matter of fact, that's why I married No, that wasn't it.
Oh, I could never be rough and domineering, I think.
But it's easy. Look, George is in the den. Let's pretend that he's Lauren Bacall.
Well, I thought you said this was easy.
It is. Now, I'm Humphrey Bogart, and he's Lauren Bacall. Now, watch this.
Hello, Dad. Do you want something?
Oh, I suppose all I got to do is whistle, huh, gorgeous?
Gorgeous?
Don't wave those long eyelashes at me, doll face.
Doll face?
Suppose you expect me to break out in goose pimples because you're sitting there in a sweater.
Gracie.
Let me get other men, not me.
Other men? Honey, you'd better sit down.
Never mind that sofa routine.
Sofa routine? Look.
Dames are a dime a dozen. There you are, Meredith. Isn't that a simple technique?
Well, not for me. Gee, I couldn't talk that way to anybody.
Well, of course you could. What do you say when one of your musicians plays a sour note?
I say, I fear you've lost control of your instrument, sir.
Well, Meredith, I guess we better use another technique. Now, how about the strong, silent Gary Cooper type?
Women like them, too?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, that's why I married Joe. No, that wasn't it either. Well, listen, I'll show you how the Gary Cooper approach works.
Oh, it's you again, huh?
Yep.
Do you still think I look beautiful in a sweater?
Nope.
What's the matter with you? Why do you carry on that way?
Yep.
Yep? That doesn't make much sense, does it?
Nope.
I took this yep or no. Are you losing your mind?
Nope.
be losing mine?
Yep.
This is the silliest thing I ever heard.
Could you make that a question?
Will you get out of here?
Yep. Well, Meredith, how about that technique?
Well, it's no use, Gracie. I can't be Humphrey Bogart, and I can't be Gary Cooper. I'll just have to be Meredith Wilson.
No, no, we're not that desperate yet.
Well, I'm a musician, not a lover. I'll never get a girl. I guess I might as well stick to my flute.
I think you'd have more fun with a girl.
Maybe we'd better forget it.
Oh, wait a minute. Look, a girl usually wants a man that all the other girls are crazy about.
Well, I've noticed that.
Sure, as a matter of fact, that's why I married you. I'm just being silly. And, Meredith, I'm going to make you the most popular man in town.
Really?
Absolutely. When I'm finished, you and that girl behind the ribbon counter will make beautiful music together.
Together?
Hmm?
I better go get another flute.
Now, you be here for dinner at 6 o'clock and leave everything to me.
Oh, I sure will. Thanks a million, Gracie. Goodbye.
Oh, poor Meredith. George! Oh, George!
Now what?
Oh, come on, dear. We're going to the dime store and invite that girl behind the ribbon counter to dinner.
What for?
Well, I've got a plan that'll get her married to Meredith.
What is it?
Oh, darling, please. If I tell you my secret, you'll know how I hook you.
You hook me? Gracie, I took you out every night. I sent you candy, sent you Hawkins, and you think you hooked me?
You could have got me without all that. Would you call that getting hooked?
Yeah, I was hooked. Let's go.
Well, there's the ribbon counter, but surely that's not Meredith's girl. She's too homely.
Well, she is homely, all right. Maybe she has hidden charms.
That, well, she didn't have to hide them.
Well, if Meredith loves her and wants to marry her, that's enough for us. Oh, miss?
Yes? Do you want to buy some ribbon?
Well, no, there's enough ribbon in our neighborhood now. We'd like to invite you over for dinner tonight.
Me? For dinner? But you don't even know me.
Well, that's all right.
Oh, I see. You've got an odd man, huh?
Very. And you're just the girl for
it. Here's the address, miss. Miss
Hardwick. Fossie Hardwick.
Well, here's the address, and we'll expect you at 5:30.
Well, shall I dress?
Oh, yes, this man is very bashful. Well, see you tonight.
Goodbye.
I can't understand how Meredith could want to marry that scarecrow.
Well, George, homely people are honest and kind and faithful. They make the best mates. As a matter of fact, that's why I marry... Well, what do you know? I finally got it.
Gracie, you've been on that telephone for an hour now. What are you doing?
Arranging for Meredith Wilson to be the greatest lover in town.
You can do that on the telephone?
Sure. You see, I called the postman and Bill Goodwin. And I also called... Oh, there's Flossie. Now, you just follow my lead.
Here I am.
Come in, Flossie. Your date will be here in a few minutes.
Who is he?
Meredith Wilson. Handsome, magnetic Meredith Wilson.
I don't believe I've ever heard of him.
Never heard of Meredith Wilson, the great lover?
Oh, is he really great?
Oh, he knows more about love than any policeman in Griffith Park.
Oh, you must be exaggerating.
Well, we'll see. Well, now, whoever could that be? Come in.
Oh, woe is me. Woe is me.
Why, Mr. Postman, what's the trouble?
My wife has left me for Meredith Wilson.
Oh, you poor man. But don't blame him. No woman can resist bedroom-eyed Wilson.
But he has stolen my wife.
Oh, what a horrible thing.
I know, but he stole her anyway.
Well, Bossy, you see?
Yeah, that sort of thing happens every day.
Every day. It happens every minute. Now, you see what I mean? Come in.
Where's Meredith Wilson? I'll kill him. I'll murder him.
Why, Bill Goodwin, whatever could be the trouble?
He has stolen my fiancée, the girl I promised to marry.
Oh.
He can't go on like this. That's the fourth fiancée he's stolen from me this week. You've got to stop him. Please, Gracie, stop him. At this rate, I'll run out of fiancées in only two more weeks. Stop him. Stop him. Here. Stop him.
Girl, too.
That's no trick for Meredith.
Oh, but Bill Goodwin is a movie star. Meredith is more fascinating than any movie actor. He has more appeal than Ronald Coleman. And as for Charles Boyer, Meredith could spot him two gaslights in a cat bar.
You'll never convince me that he's a greater lover than Charles Boyer and Ronald Coleman.
We won't, huh? Come in.
I'm frankly sorry to trouble you at this hour, Mrs. Byrne. But have you seen Meredith Wilson about?
Why, no. Is something wrong?
Wrong, you ask? My dear child, the cat has made off with the girl I treasured above rare jewels.
Meredith stole your girl?
Yes. I wouldn't be so put out if it were Herbert Marshall or Cary Grant. But the blighter isn't even British.
I wouldn't have believed it possible.
Oh, you haven't seen anything yet. Come in.
Bonjour, madame, bonjour. Could you tell me where I might find Meredith Wilson?
Now, don't tell me he has stolen your girl.
Mais oui.
Oh, well, he is really picking on you British tonight, isn't he?
I am too plain, too unromantic to compete with this Meredith Wilson. I think I go back to Paris. Au revoir, madame.
Oh, I will. Goodbye. Well, Flossie, are you convinced that Meredith is dynamite?
Oh, I'll say I am. Oh, but a guy like that would never look at me.
Now, that's where you're wrong. Meredith loves only you.
He loves me? Little plain me.
He loves you. Big plain you.
And he wants to marry you.
Oh, this is wonderful. All my life I've waited to...
Come in.
Well, is dinner ready?
Yes, and so is Flossie. Take him, Flossie. He's all yours.
Oh, come here, bedroom eyes.
Hey, stop. Let go of me. You'll break my glasses.
Meredith, stop trying to get off her lap. This is your dream girl. I fixed it for you.
But I never saw her before in my life.
This is the girl behind the dime store ribbon counter.
Oh, I'm not the regular girl. I was just substituting there.
What?
So, come on, Dreamboat. Let's get married.
But I don't want to. No. No, now stop dragging me. Help!
Help! Oh, I hope they'll be happy together.
You did a fine job.
Say, Bill.
Yes, Meredith.
You're always asking me questions about music. Now, tonight I'm going to ask you one. Did you ever whistle this tune?
Oh, sure. I know it's from Carmen, too.
Yeah?
I guess everybody knows that tune.
Oh, you're right in the groove there, Bill. Because it's said that of all the opera airs the man on the street is apt to whistle or sing, they're melodies from Carmen.
Really?
Yes, you see, Bizet composed musical themes so mellow, so rich, full-bodied and vigorous, that his opera Carmen is just naturally one of the world's most popular.
That's funny, isn't it?
Funny?
Well, yes, odd how that fellow Bizet took his ideas right from Maxwell House Coffee.
What?
Well, if he didn't, he could have. Come on now, Meredith, and help me prove it. You play me those musical themes from Carmen, and I'll tell you about Maxwell House's fine Latin American coffees.
Okay, Bill, just give me a cue for the downbeat.
Well, now, Maxwell House experts choose Manizales for mellowness.
Like the habanera.
And Madeline's for richness.
That's Michaela's aria.
Other choice Latin American coffees for vigor.
Like the famous Overture.
among this poor fool body.
Let him be the Toreador.
So, like music you ask to hear again and again, Maxwell House is the coffee more people ask for again and again. It's so good to the last drop. Here, George and Gracie.
Oh, George, don't forget we're going to be on the Danny Kaye show tomorrow night, and Bill and Meredith will be with us.
That's right, Gracie. Good night, folks.
Good night.
Again next week, when we'll all be back. George Burns, Gracie Allen, Meredith Nelson, and George Turner, Truman, Joe Goodwin. Until next Thursday, then, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's number one brand of coffee, always good to the last drop. The impersonations of Ronald Coleman and Charles Boyer on tonight's program were done by Paul Priest. Stay tuned to this station because Dinah Shore's open house is coming on in just a second. Dinah's special guest tonight is Jack Carson.
Oh, goody-goody jello pudding tonight. It tastes like grandma's only more so.
You ain't kidding. That's right.
And just as jello, six delicious lacking flavors can't be beaten. So the proof of jello pudding's in the eating.
The jello twins are hard to find, but keep on looking in your store. When sugar shortages are over, there'll be more.
Just the taste of jello pudding or of jello, and you know it's the one and only.
J-E-F-F-O. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
What a great singing commercial there at the end of the Maxwell House Coffee Time for Jell-O. J-E-L-L-O.
It was better when
well,
you did it.
They sang much better than... I'm not a singer. We talked about this yesterday. Singer, I am not.
Got it.
But that was really cool. You don't hear singing commercials on television. You know, you get the singing commercials on these radio shows from the golden age of radio back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. It was part of the... Of the whole thing. It was part of the fun of these shows.
It was the feel of it.
Yeah,
sure.
Really, really fun. October 18th, 1945. That's the Burns and Allen show. George Burns and Gracie Allen. And, you know, Paul Frees made an appearance on this and did some impersonations. And I'll bet you this was one of the first radio shows Paul Frees was ever on because he really started in radio right at about the mid-1940s, so this is it's interesting to hear him on this Burns and Allen program as well.
I would die for you.
Aw. Don't you?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Who sings this song, DJ?
Burns.
Oh, that's right. It's Prince. Oh, I love Prince. Love his music. All right, you know what? Boston Blackie this hour, guys. Boston Blackie from 1946. Then in hour three, it'll be the Hall of Fantasy. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School.
This actress stars in the upcoming film The Spy Who Dumped Me, about friends who embark on an espionage adventure.
Mm.
And the winner gets a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
This girl is definitely my top.
Well, I was going to say the clue here, besides your clue, is that Carl would date her.
She's, well, this is in the top three.
Okay,
all right.
Yeah.
Okay, the number to call, 312-981-7200. She plays Amy in Bad Moms.
I don't love you anymore. I'm so sorry, but I just don't. I'm so sick and tired of pretending like I do.
God, I've heard that so many times in my life.
That's too bad. You're going to cry.
It brings back so many memories.
Somehow, I
so
don't
many
think
hundreds
you're a crier.
And hundreds of memories.
You're not a crier.
No, I'm not.
I picked up on that.
but, you know, this girl's husband's
yes.
partner in TV is John Cryer.
Okay, you're just giving so many clues here.
Was that too much of a stretch? Was that too much of a stretch?
Yeah, it's a big jump.
All right.
A big leap.
Who is that actress? What are they on, Twilight Zone?
Yeah, playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I don't love you anymore. I'm so sorry, but I just don't. I'm so sick and tired of pretending like I do.
I took that right off of my answering machine. It was left to...
You know what, Irene? This is a true story. Last night, I watched this movie with my daughter. Friday night. I was here last night. Friday night, we were in bed, and I don't want to say what it is yet, but we
Bad
sat
Moms.
And, oh, yeah, the movie. I just didn't want to answer the question, but Irene, who is that attractive actress?
Mila Kunis.
It's Mila Kunis, but that's right.
Mila, okay.
Mila, it's all the same thing. You are absolutely a winner, Irene, and you've won a Twilight Zone 4 CD set, and it is produced by Carl, so you know it is El Primo quality. And it's hosted by Stacey Keats. So thank you, Irene, for calling in, and thank you for listening with us tonight.
Thank you. You all have a good evening as well.
You too, Irene.
Care.
Thank you very much. Okay, are we ready for Boston Blackie, my favorite detective? This was a character created by Jack Boyle. He actually wrote this character while he was serving time in a penitentiary for I think forgery or something like that. The writer Jack Boyle, and he came up with this character of a criminal who is rehabilitated. He was like this character was a thief, and he was rehabilitated in jail and decided to use his knowledge of the underworld to help fight crime. And the character was known as enemy to those who make him an enemy, friend to those who have no friend. There were a few actors that played the character in the silent films, but then Chester Morris played the role in 8 Columbia Pictures films, and they were very successful, like Meet Boston Blackie and Boston Blackie in Tokyo and all these kind of different movies that he was in. And then in 1944, Chester Morris brought the character to radio, played him for one season. It was a summer replacement for Amos and Andy, and then it was so popular on radio that they syndicated it with Dick Calmar as Boston Blackie. And then I think there were 200 or 300 episodes made with Dick Calmar, and then it made a transition to television with Kent Taylor. So a lot of people played the role. I think I'm the only person on earth who hasn't played Boston Blackie. I would like to someday. But Dick Calmar played it great. He was married to Dorothy Kilgallen, this guy. And he was just tremendous as Boston Blackie. Let's go back to a broadcast date of July 2nd, 1946. This is called Uncle Frank is Murdered by Joe Parker. To Calmar, part one of Boston Blackie.
I'm fine, Uncle Frank. How are you?
Oh, I guess I'm all right, Joe. Well, it's nice of you to come see me.
Well, I've meant to drop in on you for some time now, but I've been busy with my apartment building. A lot of repairs to take care of, you know, and I have to do most of the work myself.
Yeah, repairs are expensive, aren't they?
Well, the labor on them is. That's why I have to do most of my own work.
Joe, I like you, but you're not very subtle. I know you want my money. You probably need it. Well, one of these days, son, you will have it. Maybe sooner than you...
Yes, Uncle Frank? What were you saying?
Joe, what are you doing with that gun?
Pretty obvious, isn't it? Pointing it at you.
Joe, put down that gun. Put it down.
Oh, no. You said I'd get your money sooner than I thought. I'm getting it sooner than you thought.
Well, you're an idiot, Joe. You know you can't get away with murder.
But I know I can, Uncle Frank. I've planned this much too perfectly for it to be anything less than a perfect crime. No one saw me come in, Uncle Frank. No one. And no one will see me leave.
Maybe so, but the police will find out you're my only living relative, my sole heir, the only person in the world to benefit by my death.
I'm going to tell them that myself as soon as they come to
me. You don't dare. If you did, they'd ask you where you were at this time. They'd say, Joe, where were you at 3 o'clock Tuesday afternoon? And you won't be able to answer that without going to the chair.
You know, you're very funny, Uncle Frank. But I've already taken care of Tuesday. and I'm going to take care of you right now.
And now on to Dick Calmer as Boston Blackie. Enemy to those who make him an enemy. Friend to those who have no friend.
Faraday, it's been 3 days since the murder of Frank Wilson. 3 days, three whole days. And what have you done to catch Wilson's killer? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Oh, but we've done all we can so far, Commissioner Blake. We know who killed Frank Wilson. His nephew, Joe Parker. We're looking for Parker now. And we... Yes?
Inspector Faraday, we've located Joe Parker. He's at this address.
Good work, Collins. Let me have that. And get my squad car quick.
Yes, sir.
Well, Commissioner Blake, just watch me now. I'm going to grab Parker, prove he killed Wilson, and then sit back and let you congratulate me.
Hello, Aunt Margaret.
Blackie, come in.
Thanks.
Well, nice of you to call, Blackie. I haven't seen you all week.
I've been busy, Aunt Margaret. Say, you're looking well. How do you feel?
I'm fine, thanks to those sleeping tablets that Dr. James gave me.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Say, I've got good news for you.
Oh, no, now don't tell me you found an apartment for me.
I have, and in my building, too.
Blackie, how wonderful.
You better see it before you say that.
Will you see who's at the door, Blackie?
Sure.
If it's the newest boy, his money is on the table there by the door.
Oh, yes, I see. Yes, you want it? Faraday!
Blackie, what are you doing here?
When you think of a better question, I'll think of an answer to it. What's old, Inspector?
Old? I'll old you if you bother me in this case. Step aside, Blackie. Okay, Rollins, bring Parker in.
Come on, Parker.
Sure. Stick around, Blackie, and watch me solve a murder case in 3 seconds.
Thanks, Faraday, but I won't be able to wait. I only have a couple of hours to spare.
Quiet. Lady, I'm Inspector Faraday of the police. You Margaret Cooper?
Yes.
Good. Miss Cooper, do you know this man?
Well, yes, he's Joe Parker.
What else do you know about him?
Well, he lives in the other half of this house. And he's my landlord.
Uh-huh. Well, do you know that on Tuesday of this week, in fact, Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock, he killed a man?
No.
Yes. But he says he was here in your apartment all day Tuesday, fixing the plumbing in your kitchen.
Well, as a matter of fact, he was. I'm quite certain, Inspector Faraday. You see, Tuesday is the day Tilly Blaine comes to clean. And Tilly was here when Mr. Parker was here. He was fixing the plumbing.
Well, I guess this is all you want with me, Inspector.
You stay right where you are, Parker. Come here, Blackie. I want to talk to you.
What happens if I don't want to listen?
You'll listen, and you'll like it. Come on over here.
Thanks for telling the truth, Miss Cooper. You said this.
What do you want, Faraday?
Look, Blackie, I know Joe Parker's guilty. Could this Miss Cooper be lying?
Oh, no, Faraday. One thing I know Aunt Margaret wouldn't do is lie. And she doesn't scare easily, in case you think Parker may have threatened her.
Blackie, believe me, Parker killed Wilson. I know it. He killed Wilson Tuesday afternoon. That's definite.
But you heard what Aunt Margaret said.
Yes, I heard what she said. You're a big help. All right, Rollins, we'll have to release Parker. Let's get out of here.
Yes, sir. Leaving so soon, Inspector?
Yes. Don't you leave town, Parker.
Sorry to bother you, Miss Cooper.
Oh, that's quite all right.
So long, Blackie.
Wait a minute, Faraday. I'll go with you. Aunt Margaret, that apartment in Sunset Towers will be ready for you to look at tomorrow. Mary and I will call for you about 2 tomorrow afternoon.
All right, Blackie. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks, Miss Cooper. I'd be in jail now for murder if you hadn't told the inspector I was here all day Tuesday.
I told him that because you were here all day. I wouldn't lie, Mr. Parker. Not even to send you to prison. You see, I hate lying even more than I hate you.
House, 19 Orange Street. Want to come in with me, Mary?
Well, I think it better, Blackie. Tilly may be a beautiful thing.
I'm seeing her because she cleans Aunt Margaret's apartment every Tuesday. Happy now?
Overjoyed. But I'll go with you just the same.
All right. Wait, I'll get out your sign.
Okay. You know, I certainly wind up in some queer places with you, Blackie.
I know how your life can be made normal again.
Oh, just a minute. That was a comment, not a complaint, darling. I'm staying with you. Well, what if Tilly's not home?
Then we'll wait here till she is home. Brilliant decision.
Masterful. How do you do it?
Sharks, I pick up smart things like that all the time.
Yeah?
I'd like to speak to Tilly Blaine, please.
I'm her.
May we come in?
I don't know. What you want? Well, tell her here, Blackie, and we won't have to go in.
The master acknowledges a fellow genius.
Mm-hmm.
Tilly, do you clean house for Margaret Cooper?
Sure. I clean house for Miss Cooper every Tuesday. Been doing cleaning for Miss Cooper every Tuesday for years.
What did you clean house for last Tuesday?
Well, sure, lady. I cleaned house for Miss Cooper all day last Tuesday, like always.
Well, tell me, was anyone else in Miss Cooper's apartment while you were there?
Sure. That Mr. Parker was there, a fellow who owns the building. He held me up with all the mess he made fixing the pipes in the kitchen.
I see. And how long was Parker there?
I don't know. He was there when I came to start cleaning. That was 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning. He was there when I left with the cleaning done. That was after 5 o'clock.
Tuesday afternoon, I see. Oh, well.
Too bad, Blackie.
Too bad. Too bad. Unless there were 2 Tuesdays this week.
Hey, Diana, nice of you to drop in on me, baby. Swell surprise.
Glad to see me.
Ah, I'll show you how glad.
Oh, Joe, don't squeeze me so hard.
I'm sorry, baby. It's just that I feel good tonight, I guess.
You certainly do. What are you so picked up about?
I got a right to be, baby. I'm driving them crazy.
Driving who crazy?
The cops. They know I killed Uncle Frank, and on Tuesday, too. But they can't prove it.
Why not, Joe?
Honey, that's one thing I won't even tell you. How would you like the name Diana Larson on an apartment door at the Sunset Towers?
Are you kidding? Can you get me an apartment at the Towers?
The way I'm going, honey, there isn't anything I can't get you. You go on down there, baby. You'll get that apartment if you ask for it nice.
Oh, I'll ask for it nice, all right. But what's that grin on your face for?
Grin? It's kind of a sample. You see, you getting that apartment is going to be a laugh on Boston Blackie.
Miss Cooper, this is Tom Bradley, the superintendent of Sunset Towers. Tom, Miss Cooper.
How do you do, Mr. Bradley?
And Tom, you know Miss Wesley, of course.
Sure, sure. How are you, Miss Wesley?
I'm fine, Mr. Bradley.
Tom, Miss Cooper's here to see about that apartment you said would be available today.
I'm afraid I got bad news for you, Blackie. It's already rented.
Oh, what?
Oh, look, Tom, you told me you were saving that apartment for me. You promised you would.
No, I didn't now, Blackie. If you'll think back, you'll remember I told you I wouldn't tell anybody about it till after you'd had a chance to take it.
Well, then why is it already rented?
Well, somebody came in yesterday afternoon and asked to see it, so I had to show it.
And you didn't tell anybody about it, Mr. Bradley?
No, Miss Wesley, not a soul.
Wait a minute. I've got an idea who rented that apartment ahead of us.
Who, Blackie?
Joe Parker. He heard me tell you about it yesterday. Tom, was the apartment here rented by a tall, dark fellow wearing glasses?
No, Blackie. It was rented by a small blonde girl wearing a smile. As she said, her name was Diana Black. But I've seen her picture in the paper as Diana Larson.
Diana Larson. Blackie, she's singing on the stage at the Garden Theater.
At the Garden, eh? Swell. Let's go down to the Garden and see if we can dig up a clue.
Say, you, where's Diana Larson's dressing room?
Right over there, mister. And if you want to see her, you'll have to hurry. She goes on stage in a minute.
Thanks. Come on, Mary.
No, I think I'll just wander around backstage, Blackie. You see how considerate I'm getting?
Yes, I don't think I'm not surprised. You're going to leave me alone with a lovely lady?
Oh, but the doorman says that she goes on in a minute. Okay, darling, I'll see you when you get out.
Okay.
Hello.
Diana Larson?
Yes.
May I come in?
Why, yes, but I go on the stage in a moment.
I'll keep you only a moment.
Right. Am I supposed to know who you are?
I doubt it. I'm Boston Blackie.
Boston Blackie? My. Are you sure you're looking for me?
Yes. You rented an apartment 51 Sunset Parkway yesterday. I'd like to find out how you happen to know that apartment was vacant.
I don't think that's any of your business.
That shows how wrong you are. The picture of that fellow in glasses, Miss Lawson, the picture on your dressing table. That your boyfriend?
Maybe yes, maybe no.
Want me to take my choice, huh? Well, let's see what he's written on it. It's a baby. Who do you love?
So?
So Joe Parker asked you a question, but he gave me the answer. The answer to how you got that Towers apartment.
Oh, boy. That's definitely an organ, Lisa.
You're good,
no
Carl.
Doubt.
You know those instruments.
I'm telling you, man. I know.
You've been studying,
I have. I've been listening carefully, trying to determine which one is which.
And you've got the organ down.
I think so.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I want to thank many of our listeners for ordering my book. I'm very excited about it. I wrote a book with Martin Grams, who is an expert on classic radio. The two of us teamed up and wrote a book called The 100 Top Classic Radio Shows. And it's available at our website, WGNRadioTheater.com. WGNRadioTheater.com. It's also on Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble and pick it up. If you order it from our website, I'd be happy to personalize and autograph it for you. It's a big 224-page coffee table book. It's heavy. It's like 4 pounds. It's a big, big book. And every single one of those 100 classic radio shows like The Shadow and Jack Benny, Suspense, Burns and Allen has a 2-page spread. There's hundreds and hundreds of pictures of the classic radio stars in this book. And probably the best part about it, Lisa, you can log on to a special website and digitally download 78 classic radio shows of the 100. And then there are 3 CDs in the back of the book with 6 classic radio shows in it. So there's quite a bit. For only $29.99 plus shipping and handling, just go to WGNRadioTheater.com if you would like to order the top 100 classic radio shows. My book that I'm very excited just came out.
You should be. I know it came out November 1st. It's very special. It's unique. I think there's nothing else like it, and it's a lot of fun to browse through and gain a little bit of information. Everybody listening to this show would love that book.
Yeah, you know what Martin and I decided to do after we culled it down to 100 of the top shows? Because there's, you know, there's literally hundreds and hundreds
Did
of shows.
Did you argue about that?
No, we we talked to a bunch of experts. That,
like me, you checked in with
we
me.
We checked in.
I
and
made all the final decisions.
Yeah, once we got it down to 100, which was interesting because my 100 were not the same as Martin's 100.
Well, that's what I'm.
You know, because
talking about.
Like mine didn't have any soap operas in it.
Right.
I didn't have Little Orphan Annie in there or The Guiding Light. And by the time we went through all the experts, those kept showing up. And like Death Valley Days was another one that I didn't, you know, necessarily think should be in there, but they thought it made the top 100, you know, stuff like that. But once we got to that point, then the trick was not only finding great photographs of these stars in front of the microphones and all that kind of stuff, which was a lot of fun, and we went looked all over for that. But then Martin did a lot of went into the libraries and into microfilm and got the dates when these shows went from CBS to NBC and all this. There's a lot of detail in who the cast lists were, who the announcers were, all that. But then we had a lot of fun with sort of fun facts for every one of the shows. But the real trick was writing in 2 pages the history of the show. I mean, we really had to stick to the facts, really, because I can write about a show like Boston Blackie for many, many, many pages. So we really had to really boil it down to what happens, you know, what that show was about. So it's I think that a lot of work went into it, 6 months between the two of us to write it. And it came out, and it was a top seller on Amazon last week. It was number 2 on Amazon last week. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. People have been ordering it. I do thank you for that. I think it would make a fun Christmas present for somebody or birthday or Hanukkah present.
Everybody who's gotten it has been really, really happy with it. Everybody's been just thrilled with the book.
Yeah,
so
well,
we appreciate all the feedback as well.
Yeah, and Lisa bought a couple copies. Thanks, Lisa.
Well, I did. I bought one for my dad. I bought one for my father-in-law. And I got one for Auntie Joyce.
It was a special discount. Charged her three times what anyone
else. Yeah, it was a good deal. I paid like $90
each.
But for $30, you guys can have your own.
Yeah.
Next time I'm going to do it undercover.
Right. So, listeners, it's $29.99 plus $5.99 shipping and handling. I will be happy to autograph it and personalize it to you or to anyone you want. It's all there on our website, WGNRadioTheater.com. And I really appreciate you ordering it, those who have, and I hope you're enjoying it. All right, now it's time for the conclusion to Boston Blackie.
And now back to Boston Blackie. Police are sure Joe Parker killed his Uncle Frank Wilson on a Tuesday afternoon. But the police can't arrest Joe because Margaret Cooper, a respected citizen and aunt of Boston Blackie, insists that he was in her apartment all day the day of the murder. A cleaning woman, Tilly Blaine, also strengthens Parker's alibi. The next day, unable to make any headway with the case, Blackie and Mary take Miss Cooper to the superintendent of Blackie's building to see an apartment that is vacant. But they learn the apartment is already rented to a Miss Diana Larson, girlfriend of Joe Parker. As we return to our story, Inspector Faraday is in his office.
Rollins! Hey, Rollins!
Yes, Inspector.
Any words from the lab on those Wilson case reports?
Nothing yet, Inspector, but they'll be through soon.
Well, hurry them up. We got to get some proof against that guy Parker.
Rollins, my genius enter the realm of the uninformed.
Blackie, you stay out of my office. I've got an unsolved murder on my hands. Now, scram, Blackie, before I take it out on you.
Faraday, why don't you be smart about it and let me beat this case for you?
You couldn't beat a drum for me. Now, listen, Blackie, I've had just about enough of you.
Well, you don't want much, do you? I haven't come anywhere near giving my all.
Well, whatever it is, it's all I can take. Rollins, what are you standing there for? I told you to get out of here.
Me, Inspector?
You, Rollins. Somebody better get out of here.
Faraday, I've got an announcement to make. You're about to go to work for me.
Me work for you? That'll be the day.
Okay, then it's the day. Listen, I just got this wire from someone in Kansas City who knows who killed Wilson. It says, if you'll meet me in the Scranton Hotel here Saturday night, I'll tell you who killed Frank Wilson.
Hey, let me look at that wire. Who signed it?
It's unsigned, Faraday. Even you can tell that. Look, give me a letter of introduction to the chief of police in Kansas City saying I am okay, will you? I need his help.
You think I'm crazy?
Leading question, Faraday. Try it sometime when I'm not asking you for a favor.
Nothing doing. You go to Kansas City, you go on your own. If you ask me, you're going out there on a wild goose chase.
Maybe so, but so far in this case, you wound up with a big goose egg.
Dr. James, I thought you'd never get here.
Oh, I came as soon as I could, Mr. Parker. I'm awfully busy on Monday. What's the matter with Miss Cooper?
She won't wake up. I was worried when I couldn't reach her on the phone, so I came down to her apartment here. She must have taken too many sleeping tablets, Doctor. She's been sleeping since Saturday night, and here it is Monday.
Have a look at her. I warned her against taking too many sleeping tablets. You better try to wake her up. Miss Cooper.
Doctor, do you think she's sleeping rather deeply, isn't she?
Yes, but her breathing is normal enough. Miss Cooper.
I tried shaking her a little while ago. It didn't do any good.
It must have done some good. She seems to be coming out of it. Miss Cooper. Miss Cooper, wake up.
Dr. James, what are you doing here? What's the matter?
You've been asleep, Miss Cooper, for a long time. It's Monday morning.
Monday? And the last I knew it was Saturday night. Oh, what's he doing here?
Parker, he called me when he couldn't get you on the telephone and then couldn't wake you when he investigated.
Oh, I'm awfully sorry I alarmed you, Doctor. And you too, Mr. Parker.
That's okay. I'm glad you're all right.
I'll be going, Miss Cooper. Say, Sunday is a day of rest, but you certainly overdid it.
Oh.
come in.
Hello, Aunt Margaret.
Oh, good afternoon, Blackie. Hello, Mary.
How are you, Aunt Margaret?
Oh, I'm fine. I hope you didn't try to get me on the phone yesterday, though, Blackie. I slept all day long.
You did? Uh-huh. Well, as a matter of fact, I wasn't even in town yesterday. I flew to Kansas City the night before to see a little man who wasn't there.
I don't understand.
Blackie got a telegram saying a man would meet him in Kansas City and tell him who killed Mr. Wilson. But the man didn't show up.
Well, why not?
Obviously, somebody was trying to get me out of town over Sunday and did a good job of it, too. Say, do you mind if I turn on your radio and when I hear the news?
Oh, I'm sorry, Blackie. My radio doesn't work. It hasn't worked since last Monday.
What's the matter with it?
I don't know.
Well, let me take a look at it.
What do you know about fixing radios?
Nothing. I didn't ask to fix it. I just asked to look at it.
Okay.
Sometimes if you shake these things, they... Say, there's something certainly loose inside it. Better see what. Hey, one of these tubes is out of the socket. No wonder this radio doesn't work.
A tube is out? Well, I don't see how that could have happened.
I don't either. The way those things are put in, it couldn't have fallen out. Ah, there, I'll put it back in place. Let's see if your radio works now.
Well, it lights up.
Oh, they did that before. It just wouldn't play.
Ah, well, I have a hunch it's going to play now. Mark, only me.
And baby makes three. Ooh.
Hey! Hey, there's music on the radio. It works. Oh, yes, it does. Oh, genius.
And Margaret, I think somebody tampered with your radio so it wouldn't work after Monday night. Look, Aunt Margaret, this is just a shot in the jar. But the police are convinced Joe killed his uncle, Frank, last Tuesday afternoon, and I'm convinced of it, too. Are you sure he was here last Tuesday?
Yes, Blackie, all day long. I know it was Tuesday. Tilly was here to clean, and Tilly comes here every Tuesday.
But you didn't listen to the radio Tuesday, did you?
Well, I tried to, but I couldn't. The radio wouldn't work.
No, because somebody didn't want it to work. And that somebody is Joe Parker. You're sure it was Tuesday that Joe Parker and Tilly Blaine were here?
What are you driving at, Blackie?
But of course it was Tuesday. I wouldn't have told the police it was Tuesday if it hadn't been Tuesday. I'm sure it was Tuesday. I always get milk on Tuesdays. The milk was on the doorstep, as it always is Tuesday mornings. And the Tuesday paper.
Yeah, that doesn't mean much. Somebody could have put the milk in the paper there any day. And Margaret, something tells me Joe Parker and Tilly Blaine weren't here Tuesday at all. Now, what do you remember about the other days last week?
Well, not too much, Blackie. Every day is pretty much the same to an old woman. All I remember is that Tilly was here on Tuesday. The police were here a few days later. And then when I went to sleep Saturday night, it was raining.
And Margaret, did you say it was raining when you went to sleep Saturday night?
Yes.
That's impossible.
What do you mean, Mary?
Well, you wouldn't know this, Blackie, because you were out of town. But it didn't rain Saturday night. It rained Sunday night.
It didn't rain Saturday
night? No.
Oh, but it did. I remember when I went to bed, it was raining.
Well, Aunt Margaret, if it was raining when you went to bed, then you went to bed Sunday night, not Saturday.
Oh, but that's impossible. I slept all day Sunday.
Wait a minute. This is another way of explaining everything. Aunt Margaret, how do you know you slept all day Sunday?
Because Dr. James was here to wake me up. Mr. Parker was alarmed when I slept so long and called the doctor.
So nobody but Parker really knows how long you slept. And Margaret, you didn't sleep over Sunday. You went to bed Sunday night thinking it was Saturday.
But no, Blackie. So why would I think it was Saturday night when it was really Sunday?
Because Parker arranged it that way. You slept a whole day, but it wasn't Sunday. I'm betting that Tilly Blaine was here not on Tuesday, but on Wednesday. And Joe Parker was here fixing the plumbing not on Tuesday, the day of the murder, but Wednesday.
No, Blackie.
Yes, Aunt Margaret, you slept all day Tuesday. Joe Parker probably fixed it so you took an overdose of sleeping tablets Monday night to see to it that you did sleep through Tuesday.
Well, but why would he do that?
Why? Because he planned his murder of Frank Wilson for Tuesday, and he also planned on using you as an alibi. Who told you what day it was when you woke up on what was really Wednesday morning?
Well, no one. I just thought it was Tuesday because Tilly was here when I woke up. The Tuesday newspaper was outside and the mill.
Oh, it'd be simple to arrange that.
And Parker was here, too?
Yes, he woke me up pounding on the pipes he was fixing in the kitchen.
Thanks, Aunt Margaret. Don't tell Parker what we've been talking about just now. Go on, Mary.
All right.
We're going to see Tilly Blaine. I'm going to make that scrub woman help to clean up this case. You didn't go to Miss Cooper's apartment Tuesday, did you, Tilly?
I told you I did. I always go to her apartment on Tuesday.
But last week you went on Wednesday, didn't you?
No, I went on Tuesday, I said.
Joe Barker told me it was Wednesday, and that he paid you to say it was Tuesday.
He did?
Yes, and I guess there's nothing I can do for you if you insist upon lying. I'm going to have to turn you over to the police.
The police? What for?
Implication in the murder of Frank Wilson. You're helping alibi Joe Parker, who killed him. And you'll be tried for murder, too, of course.
Murder? Yes, Tilly. Murder.
Well, now, wait a minute. I don't want no part of murdering anybody. I didn't murder anyone.
Now, I cleaned for Miss Cooper on Wednesday. Mr. Parker told me to. And he paid me to tell anybody you asked that it cleaned on Tuesday.
Oh, Blackie, that proves your theory.
Yes, and it proves Joe Parker murdered Wilson, too. And on Tuesday, just as the police say he did. Tilly, will you tell the police what you just told me?
Well, if I have to. But I don't want any truck with the police.
Don't worry, Tilly. You'll go free after you've had your truck with the police, and the police will send their wagon for Joe Parker.
All right, Parker. We know the whole story, so start talking. Tilly told us most of what we wanted to know.
Yes, Parker, and my, how she can talk. We know you were free to kill your uncle on Tuesday because it was Wednesday, not Tuesday, that you and Tilly spent in Miss Cooper's apartment.
Yeah?
Yeah. You gave her an overdose of sleeping tablets on Monday. Woke her up Wednesday morning, but told her it was Tuesday. You had Tuesday's bottle of milk to prove it, Tuesday's papers to prove it, Tilly Blaine to prove it, and you fixed the radio to keep your plan from going wrong. You made only one mistake, Parker. You forgot to consult the weatherman.
Did I?
Yeah. And let me have the pleasure of telling him about that, Blackie.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, Parker. You try to fix it so Miss Cooper would be straight on her days again. She went to sleep on what she thought was Saturday night, only it was Sunday night. When you woke her up, you told her she'd slept all day Sunday, and now it was Monday. That set her straight on the days, all right. A little rain threw the whole thing out. But it was very cute.
I thought so. And it almost worked, didn't it? Sure had you guys running around in circles when I mixed up Aunt Margaret's days, didn't I?
Yes, you sure did, Parker. And maybe Aunt Margaret's days were mixed up, too. But your days are numbered.
That's Boston Blackie, July 2nd, 1946, with Uncle Frank murdered by Joe Parker, starring Dick Calmar. I almost said Dick Powell. But it was Dick Calmar, and then we had Leslie Woods as his girlfriend Mary, and Maurice Tarplin as Inspector Faraday, as heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Hey, did you hear about the fire at the circus? Did you hear about that? Did you hear about the fire at the circus?
No.
It's intense.
It was better when I told
him. That's what I was thinking.
Listen, I am not above stealing jokes.
I feel like
I laughed the first time. The second time, it just didn't tickle me. Jokes. Somehow.
All right, well, in the next hour, it's a good mystery on the Hall of Fantasy. What is this? You know it.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Smooth criminal, Michael Jackson.
Smooth criminal, yeah. I was reading something about, you know, I did a fun fact a few weeks ago about Thriller and how Vincent Price did the creepy rap, you know, song in there.
Yeah.
I was reading all about it. And Vincent Price, who was in a lot of these radio shows, when they asked him to do this creepy rap thing, he came in, he nailed it first time, but they gave him headphones. And he was like, what is this? And they're like, yeah, these, why don't you use these when you do it? And he was doing it and talking, and he's like, I can't use these headphones. I don't want to hear myself doing it, because you went during the golden age of radio, they would stand around the microphones. They didn't have headphones.
Right.
So he wasn't used to wearing. Right. We all wear headphones now. You know, we talk into the microphone, we hear ourselves, and it seems normal to us, right?
Well,
nothing seems normal to us, because
we're not completely normal.
Because we're not normal. Close. But yeah, I thought it was really, it was kind of interesting. I was like, I can't do it with it. Take these off. So he did that whole thing. He nailed it first time, but without the headphones.
Because what did he say? What did Carl just say? Did he say something?
And, you know, Vincent Price played the Invisible Man in a movie. And did you hear about why the Invisible Man refused the job offer? Did you know that? He refused the job offer. He just couldn't see himself doing it. So anyway, in this hour, it is...
Your comedic timing is improving.
It's getting
It's improving. I like it.
Really?
I might do some stand-up at the...
Teddy Vasquez could be the stand-up comedian.
We could do a 1-2 punch, you know?
Yeah, that would
I go up
really
there,
well.
Warm up the audience for her, and then she comes on.
Oh, yeah. That would be good.
Yeah. All right, in this hour, Hall of Fantasy with Carl Grayson, who was the voice of Creature Features. Oh, I loved Creature Features.
You were too young, but Carl and I grew up with that. I used to watch on the... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, WGN Channel 9.
Yeah.
And I think it was like...
It was so scary.
10 o'clock or 10:30. Yeah. I think it might have been 10:30.
I thought it was really late.
I think it was 10:30, and it was for 90 minutes, when they would have a 60-minute movie, like a 70-minute movie. They would have the Wolfman or Frankenstein. And, the opening with all those film clips.
I remember.
The Wolfman walking in with the fog. Oh,
so good.
Scary stuff.
That's our childhood revisited.
So that's what we have this hour, Hall of Fantasy. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actor stars in the upcoming film Horse Soldiers, about the first Special Forces team deployed to Afghanistan after 9/11.
I do a lot of doubling for him in the movies because we look so much alike.
Yeah,
this guy.
I could see that.
Yeah,
right, that's a good clue. So the winner will get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
Here's the number, 312-981-7200. This guy plays Thor.
I know, but the Bifrost was destroyed. The Nine Realms erupted into chaos. Wars were raging. Marauders were pillaging. I had to put an end to the slaughter.
We even sound alike.
Yeah.
Now our accents are exactly the same.
I was thinking just that when I was listening.
Yeah. All right. So who is that actor? 312-981-7200.
We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play it again.
I know, but the Bifrost was destroyed. The Nine Realms erupted into chaos. Wars were raging. Marauders were pillaging. I had to put an end to the slaughter.
Marauders were pillaging. I had to put an end to the slaughter.
Are you done talking yet?
I think.
Yeah. Hey, Chris.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Great. So who is that actor that sounds and looks just like Carl?
Well, that would be me, actually, but no.
I thought for a second our producer wrote the wrong name because she wrote Chris, and I thought maybe she was a little confused, but I gave her no credit. So your name is Chris, and the answer was Chris Hemsworth, so you are a winner, and you've won the Twilight Zone 4 CD set, and it's fantastic. You're going to love it. It's great. Put it on late at night and cuddle up under the covers and turn down the lights.
Well, if I do that, then I won't be able to hear you guys.
No, you'll hear it later. At 2 a.m., you can put it on. Not until 2. That would be like blasphemy.
Wonderful.
Thanks a lot for calling in. Great to hear from you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you. I appreciate you. All right, it is time now for the Hall of Fantasy. This was created by Richard Thorne in 1946. It was a mystery and horror series. Stories were written by Robert Olson, and it was directed by Thorne. Now, the stories involved struggles against the supernatural, where man was usually the loser. And they had shock endings on this. Carl Grayson, Jim Amici, who was Don Amici's brother, Harry Elders, and Richard Thorne usually starred in the episodes. Carl Grayson stars in this particular episode from 1947 called Man Size in Marble. Here's part one of the Hall of Fantasy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Granite Furniture Company with stores in Sugar House, Murray, and Provo presents... Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friends. We shall descend to the world of the unknown and forbidden. Down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of Man-Size in Marbles.
The Granite Furniture Company brings you the Hall of Fantasy. Listen now to original tales of the imagination and some of the classics of the supernatural as we take you down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy to the mysterious realms of the unknown. These are stories of eerie and fantastic thrills brought to you by your friends at the Granite Furniture Stores. And now for tonight's story, a radio adaptation by Bob Olson of E. Nesbitt's story, Man Size in Marble. The villagers called it a delusion. That explanation gave them some comfort. Since it will give you comfort also, I'll say no more about it, except that it's difficult to understand how hallucinations can commit murder. Ours was one of those marriages on a dime. I'd been doing a bit of painting in those days and never knew what it was to have the money I really needed. But then Laura knew this before she married me.
Well, we'll get along if we're careful. You can paint and I'll write articles for the magazines.
Living in town will be out of the question, dear. Well, we can find some little place in the country.
As long as it's picturesque and sanitary, it doesn't matter where it is.
And so we spent our honeymoon lightheartedly looking for a place that was both sanitary and picturesque. The two qualities that rarely keep company in one cottage. Little rose-covered trellises would invariably hide the corruption that lurked inside. We'd looked so hard and were so confused by the eloquence of house agents that we seriously began to doubt if we could tell a house from a haystack, even if we found one. But when we came out to the little village of Brenzett and thence 2 miles out to see the famous little church, our search was ended, for there, just 2 fields away, was the cottage. Picturesque it was, for it was long and low, with rooms taking off in unexpected directions. 2 of the rooms were of ancient stonework, now covered with moss and ivy. It was all that remained of a huge manor that had stood here years ago. Around these rooms had risen the cottages that stood this day quite by itself. Our nearest neighbor was a jolly Scotch doctor, McCarthy by name, whose cottage was a little distance down the lane. Our new home nestled cozily against a low hill and looked out across the marsh meadows to the sea. Yes, it was a pretty cottage. Though stripped of its roses and jasmine, it would no doubt have been hideous. The rent was absurdly cheap, and it seemed quite likely that between the two of us, we could keep the kettle simmering. We spent the rest of our honeymoon in second-hand shops picking up odds and ends of oak and chippendale until the cottage soon became very homey. Fully settled, we were so happy. And that day we looked from the latticed window onto the old-fashioned garden with its colorful splash of hollyhocks and lilies. Laura sat outlined against the window, I before my easel.
What are you painting, Ben?
You, my dear.
Me? Well, why not this lovely countryside?
First my wife, then the countryside. And what are you writing?
A verse.
About what?
You.
It was a gay life. The sort that only the quite humble or the very rich could enjoy. Our fortune was added to when we found Mrs. Dorman, a tall peasant woman with a good face and figure to keep house for us. Laura was delighted with her, for Mrs. Dorman was full of stories of the past. Stories of the smugglers and highwaymen who dominated this part of England, cutting purses and throats with equal zest. Better still were her stories about the things that walked and the sights that one met of a starry night. They gave Laura a good deal of material for her articles. Old wives' tales, I called them. 3 months passed quickly. We hadn't had a single quarrel. That's why it startled me when on the return from a visit to Dr. McCarthy, Laura, who had always been so happy, rushed to my arms and buried her dark little head in my shoulder and wept. Laura, what is it?
It's Mrs. Dorman.
Well, what about Mrs. Dorman?
She's leaving us.
Leaving us? Well, what on earth for?
She says that she must leave before the end of the month. She says that her niece is ill, but I don't believe her because, well, her niece has always been ill. She acted so queerly.
Don't cry, Laura. You know, it's a terrible shock to see you cry. I might cry a bit myself just watching you, and you'd never respect me again.
Oh, but it's serious. Those people in the village are so sheepy, and, well, if Mrs. Dorman leaves us without any explanation, no one will come and take her place. I just know it.
Well, then we'll share the housework.
But we'll have no time to earn what we need, and, oh, we've been doing so nicely now. We'll have to work all day and rest only when the kettle's boiling.
Oh, you exaggerate, Laura. We'll have less time, but there'll still be time. However, when Mrs. Dorman comes back, I'll have a talk with her. We'll come to some sort of terms. Tell you what, let's take a walk up to the old church.
The church was large and lonely, and we enjoyed the stroll in the moonlight. The path that went through a wood and along the crest of a little hill was called the bier path, for the dead had been carried along this path to be buried. The churchyard was enclosed by a low wall and ceilinged by several large elms whose branches stretched out as if in benediction over the dead. We entered the old church from a long, low porch and through a heavy oak door studded with iron. Inside, the arches rose up into the darkness. We strolled up to the chancel where the fine colored glass windows let in faint hues of filtered moonlight. It gave everything a substance of shadow, even the gray marble figures of the two knights who lay there in full plate armor with hands upheld in everlasting prayer. You know, it's a funny thing. If there is any light in this church at all, it seems to shine on these figures.
Who are they?
No one knows. The peasants say they were marauders, bandits, that they were the scourge of their day.
Does it give you kind of a strange feeling to know they used to live where we live now?
I hadn't thought much about it. Has Mrs. Dorman told you the story?
She doesn't know about it. She said the house was struck by a bolt of lightning.
I heard it was the vengeance of heaven against their foul deeds.
Funny how a pair like that would be given such an honored place in this little church.
Well, the gold was good, no matter where it came from. Their heirs probably bought the honor.
Those marble statues certainly aren't flattering.
Yeah. From the looks on the faces, even in marble, I doubt their conversion to Christianity.
The church looked very weird as the shadows cast eerie forms about. We looked again at the sleeping warriors and a feeling of awe came over us. Outside, we sat on the ancient stone seats, gazing out across the moon-misted meadows. A sense of quiet and peacefulness came over us. At such times, troubles don't exist. Well, feel better than you did there?
Yes, Vance. Oh, let's never leave this place. It's lovely.
Ah, yes. Wasn't it silly to get all worked up over Mrs. Dorman?
It's still a terrible nuisance.
Granted, but if scrubbing and blacking boots is the worst of our lot, we'll manage quite well even without Mrs. Dorman.
Of course we will.
And nevertheless, when we get back to the house, I'll have a talk to her. She should be there by now.
I hope you can convince her.
Mrs. Dorman, what's this I hear about your leaving?
Well, I'd like to leave before the end of the month, sir.
But aren't you happy here? Maybe you'd like a raise in your wages.
It's not that, sir. You and your lady have been most kind.
Then, suppose we work it out so that you can stay.
No, Mr. Longham, I'd rather leave. My niece is ill.
Yes, I know, but she's been ill all along. Would you consider staying on for another month?
No, sir. I want to leave before Thursday.
But this is Monday, woman. That's rather short notice. I'll tell you what. Stay on until next week.
Maybe I can come back next week.
But why must you go this week? Well, speak up.
It's this house, sir.
This house? Well, what about it?
They say that strange deeds was done here in olden times.
In olden times? Oh, but this is now. What deeds do you mean? Well, don't worry, Mrs. Dorman. I'm not going to laugh at you.
Well, sir, have you seen them two shapes beside the altar in the church?
You mean the effigies of the knights in armor?
I mean them two bodies drawn out man-size in marble.
A very graphic description, Mrs. Dorman, but what about the knights?
In the village, they say that on all sides Eve,
Those bodies come to life.
Those marble statues?
I saw that they rise up from their slabs and walk down the aisle in their marble. Then when the church clock strikes 11, they come out into the night and walk over the grind.
But how do you suppose...
When the night has been wet, there was the marks of their feet along the beer path.
Well, where do they go?
Back to their home.
Their home? But their home was...
In this house.
Well, did anyone ever see this happen?
I saw him. All I know is what I know.
Who was living here last year?
No one, sir. The lady who owned the house spent the summer here, but she always went up to London a good month before the night.
And so you think you must go?
Yes, sir. My niece is ill.
Oh, your niece... Well, very well, Mrs. Dorman. Go if you think you must. But don't say anything about this to Mrs. Langham.
Must you go, Mrs. Dorman?
Yes, ma'am. This is Thursday. I can't stay no longer.
It's going to put quite a load on us.
Don't try to do too much, Mrs. Langham. If there's anything I can do next week, well, I won't mind in the least.
Thank you. Oh, but we'll try to manage.
And whatever you do, lock the door early tomorrow night and make the sign of the cross over it.
What do you mean?
That's Mrs. Dorman's little Halloween joke, dear.
It's no joke. And if you ask me...
Goodbye, Mrs. Dorman.
Goodbye. And don't forget what I said.
What did she mean, Vance?
Nothing, dear. Mrs. Dorman is just a superstitious old biddy, that's all. I would have looked forward to Friday a much happier man if I could have believed what I had just told Laura. But Friday came, the day before All Saints' Eve, the day this story ends. In fact, the day that gave this story its horrible substance.
You are listening to Man Size and Marble in tonight's journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy. Brought to you by your friends at the Granite Furniture Company with stores in Sugar House, Murray, and Provo.
I'm going to go there. I'm going to buy some furniture at the Granite Furniture Company.
It's probably really nice.
I'm going to go to Provo
good.
For that.
Good. Get me
I don't
something.
Know where that is.
Get me something
that's
while you're
where
there.
I'm going to go. That's the first portion of the Hall of Fantasy.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Burl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Esmeralda. Thank you, Roger. And it is time now for the conclusion to Man Size in Marble on the Hall of Fantasy.
And now back to tonight's story, Bob Olson's adaptation of Man Size in Marble.
I arose early that morning and had already built a rather smoky success of a fire when Laura came down as bright as the bright morning itself. We had breakfast and went after the housework. When the brushes and pails were silent at last, we set and pails were silent at last and spent one of the merriest days since our wedding. That afternoon we took a long walk, completely happy, and Laura sweeter than ever. I decided that housework was good for her. We watched the deep flame of sunset as it slowly faded to a dull gray, and then walked back to the cottage hand in hand without a word. Once inside, we sat in the parlor and seemed to settle into a deep silence. I thought it was a happy silence, and what I asked Laura had no particular significance at the time. You seem sad, Laura. I was surprised at her answer.
Yes, I don't think I feel quite well. I've had the shivers, and it isn't cold, is it?
No, unless it's one of those nasty mists that creep up from the marsh.
There is no mist, dear.
Doesn't seem to be at that. No mist. In that case, darling, you're not entitled to a chill. Sorry.
Vance.
Mm-hmm?
Do you ever have a presentiment of evil?
Don't believe in them.
I do. When my father died, he was away in North Scotland. But the night he died, I knew it. Oh, forgive me, Vance. Come and light up the candles on the piano, and we'll play one of our duets.
Hmm.
10 o'clock already.
Light up your pipe if you'd like, Vance. I don't mind.
Yeah, I think I'll take it outside.
May I come too?
No, dear. You're much too tired. I shan't be long. You get to bed or you'll be ill.
You're taking good care of me, darling.
You have to. Can't do all this housework by myself, you know.
Then give me a kiss.
That will be a pleasure.
Let me go with you.
You get some rest.
Vance?
Yes?
We've been very happy today, haven't we?
Even happier than usual, sweetheart.
You won't be gone long, will you?
No, dear. Not long. I stepped out, leaving the door unlatched, for I expected to be back shortly. The night was magnificent. Huge masses of cloud, dark and heavy, seemed to clasp hands and reach from horizon to horizon. Through this flowing stream of clouds moved the moon, like a dolphin diving in and out of an endless succession of waves. The treetops swayed like a metronome to the gentle swing of the clouds. There was the mystic glow on the earth that comes from the blend of dew and moonlight. I drank in the serene beauty of the night. There wasn't a hint of emotion about. Not even a leaf stirred. The wind was high up, busy herding the clouds. Across the meadow, I saw the church tower standing out black against the sky. I suddenly thought of the 3 happy months I'd known here with Laura. Just then, the church sounded its bell. Hey, 11 o'clock. I should be getting back to the house. But first, I think I'll visit the church. I felt so happy and so very thankful. I wanted to take my gratitude to the old chapel that had heard the sorrows and the joys of its people for so many countless years. On my way, I passed our cottage and looked in the window where I saw Laura's dark little head silhouetted against the pale blue wall. She was very still. I decided not to disturb her. I turned down Beer Path. It was such a peaceful night that at first I was conscious of nothing. And then, suddenly, I became aware of a rustling sound that broke the stillness ever so gently. I stopped to listen. The sound stopped, too. I took another step and listened. The step seemed to echo my own. Well, if that's a poacher, he's a fool not to step more lightly. I left the Beer Path and took to the woods. The footsteps seemed to echo along the path I had just left. It was strange. Yes, it was strange. Ah, but then, all night sounds are strange. I passed through the corpse gate and walked among the graves to the low porch of the church. The door was open. Did I leave that open? I'd hate to have the damp get in and ruin those fine old fabrics. I went in and was halfway up the aisle when suddenly I remembered. That bell struck 11 o'clock. This is the very day, the very hour when the shapes drawn out man's size in marble begin to walk. Once I did remember, it came on me with a shiver. And I was ashamed. So to make up for it, I walked boldly to the altar. I did that because I wanted to tell Mrs. Dolman how peacefully the shapes had slept through the ghastly hour. And so with my hands nonchalantly shoved into my pockets, I passed up the aisle. In the dim gray light, the other end of the church looked it looked larger than usual. The arches above the 2 tombs seemed to have grown too. At that moment, the moon came out from behind a cloud, and in the ghostly beams of light, I saw the reason. They're gone! I steadied myself. It's some fool's practical joke. They can't be gone. I'm not in the right place. It's too dark to see here clearly. Yes, that's it. I took a newspaper from my pocket and lit it with a match. It flared up brightly. The confirmation was sickening. The bodies drawn out man's size in marble had actually disappeared from the church. Suddenly I was gripped with an indefinable horror. It was an overwhelming certainty of finished calamity. I threw down the torch and dashed down the aisle, out the front door and into the night. They're gone. They're gone. Help me, someone. The bodies. They're gone.
Settle down, man.
Let go of me, you fool. The marble figures have gone from the church. They've disappeared, I tell you.
Hey, they know.
You've been smoking, Tamoch. Smoking and listening to old wives' tales.
But, Doctor, I've seen the bare slabs with my own eyes. They're gone, I tell you.
Well, come back with me. I'm going to the Palmer's Knoll. His lass is sick. We'll have a look into the bare slabs.
Well, you can go if you like. I'm going home to Laura.
Rubbish. I'll never admit it. You can't go around all your life as saying you saw a slab of marble in vitality. You can't do it, man.
I'm not going back there.
Then you want that you should be a coward?
Coward? No, but...
I, a coward? I may can help you if you didn't go down with me.
Oh, all right. Come on.
No, here we are at the church. Come in with me.
I'm coming.
What have you got your ears closed for? Here. I'll strike a match. No, look there. What have you had to drink, man?
I opened my eyes, and what I saw made me absolutely mad. A huge black screen dropped across my reason. But there on the cold gray slabs were the two grotesque shapes in their marble. Dr. McCarthy, I simply don't know what to say. It must have been the light, or maybe I have been working too hard. You know, I was sure they were gone.
I'm quite aware of that. You need to do something about that brain of yours. But wait, look at this hand.
What's wrong with it, Doctor?
It's been broken. There's a finger missing.
Finger? But the last time I saw it, it was perfect.
Someone may have tried to remove it.
That can't be right. My impression was that they were gone. Completely disappeared.
That was too much tobacco and painting.
Perhaps. Well, come along, Dr. McCarthy. My wife will be getting anxious. I told her I wouldn't be gone long.
Well, I should be going off to the Palmer's.
I'd appreciate it if you'd come on to the cottage with me and drink to my better senses. Or confusion to all ghosts or something.
Well, it's pretty late, no? I had to see a lot of people tonight. I could go to the Palmer's tomorrow. I'll come with you.
I believe I needed the sensible old doctor more than the Palmer girl did.
You've had an illusion, Mon. Nothing more than an illusion.
Yes, I fancy you're right about that, Doctor. But it was a most amazing one. Dr. McCarthy then went into a dissertation on ghosts and apparitions as we walked on up to the cottage. When we reached the garden path, I was a little puzzled by the bright light that was streaming out the front door. Soon I saw that it was wide open. Had Laura gone for a walk? Well, come on in, Doctor. We'll find Laura and then pour ourselves a drop of whiskey.
Good.
The house was ablaze with candles. Laura had not only lit the wax ones, but there must have been a dozen other sputtering, glaring tallow dips stuck all over the room in odd little places. Laura! We have company! Oh, Laura! I wonder if she went out for a walk. Laura!
Lance! Yes, look!
Where? There in the little recess of the window I saw her. What had she been doing there? Looking for me? But the doctor said it before I quite dared to.
Someone's been in this room. I still not belong here.
Who?
Yare. Who?
Laura didn't move. Her mouth was drawn and her eyes were wide open. Very wide. She looked as if she'd heard a footstep behind her and turned to meet... What? I passed my hands over her eyes. They saw nothing. What had they seen last? The doctor moved toward her, but I pushed him aside as if I were afraid of what he'd say. And then I took her in my arms. Laura, Laura, darling. I've got you now. You're safe.
Aye, she's safe. She's dead.
Oh, no. She fell into my arms like a limp, loose-jointed doll. I was slightly mad with this horrible sense of loss. But I knew she was dead. I knew it, and nothing mattered anymore. Laura was dead, and the world was dead. And I silently prayed that I might die.
What's in her hand?
I don't know. I don't care. Laura's dead. But the doctor pried open her fingers. And soon something fell out of that grim clutch and dropped to the floor. We looked at it, and then at each other. For what we saw was no hallucination. It seemed to fairly shriek its defiance to reason. For there on the floor was a gray marble finger.
And so runs the tale of Man Size in Marble. Remember to join us next week at the same time for another journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy.
Tonight's story was adapted from the story by E. Nesbitt entitled Man Size in Marble. Heard in tonight's program were Carl Greyson as Vance Langan, Beth Calder as Laura, Phyllis Perry as Mrs. Darman, and Archie Hugely as Dr. McCarthy. Musical background was provided by Earl Donaldson. The technical supervisor was Nephi Sorensen. This program was written by Bob Olson and produced and directed by Richard Thorne. Remember, be with us again next Sunday night on call at 8:30 p.m. when the Granite Furniture Stores in Sugar House, Murray, and Provo will take you on another journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy.
My new couch is being delivered next week from the Granite Furniture Company.
Nice. What does it look like?
Free shipping.
Oh, good.
From Provo.
Great. Where is Provo located?
I don't really know, but okay. That's the Hall of Fantasy, April 13th, 1947, Man Size in Marble, starring Carl Greyson, who was one of the two voices from Creature Features. The other was Marty McNeely. And who is in the studio with us? None other than Nick DeGilio.
Hey.
What's up, Nick?
How are you?
Hey, did you know that Milton Berle did radio before he became Mr.
TV? I did know that, yes.
He was, his radio show was not his TV. I mean, his TV show, he was amazing. I mean, he was Mr. Television.
Yep.
But he had a pretty long run on radio. Hey, what's on the show this morning?
Well, it's Monday, so we're going to review the new movies. Got a lot of movies to talk about, actually. And my dad's going to call in to tell a joke. We're also going to talk about your favorite shows that you watched when you were a kid.
Mm.
So,
did you hear the joke that I said earlier? We were talking about Vincent Price, and I said Vincent Price starred as the Invisible Man in a movie. And did you hear about the Invisible Man turned down a job offer? That's because he couldn't see himself doing it.
Good one, right?
Okay, right?
Yeah. We were just talking about Creature Features, which is more on point with...
you guys have Carl Greyson in that.
Exactly.
Yeah, Carl Greyson.
Yeah.
And Marty McNeely was
Marty
the other
McNeely,
voice.
I always, when I was a kid and I watched Creature Features every Saturday night,
yep.
I always knew that I was up too late when Nightbeat with Marty McNeely came on.
Oh, right, Nightbeat.
Came on afterwards.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, boy, I'm up really late because it's Marty McNeely on Nightbeat.
Now, I think Creature Features had different time slots, but primarily it was 10:30, wasn't it?
10:30 Saturday night.
Yeah, it went to midnight because it was like a 70-minute film that they would in that 90-minute time slot.
I remember... Just Saturday nights. I think it was 10:30.
I think it was 10:30.
Every Saturday. And then as a little kid, and then as I got older, I discovered Saturday Night Live. So
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I've been watching Saturday Night Live. Yeah, I was watching Saturday Night Live since the first episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I remember, let's try to think now. It had the guy from Taxi. Why am I having a problem remembering his name now?
What had the guy from Taxi?
The first episode of Saturday Night Live.
No, the first episode of Saturday Night Live was hosted by George Carlin.
Oh, it was, huh? Okay. George Carlin. Uh-huh. Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow, why did I think it was Latka?
He was on it. He was Andy Kaufman.
Oh, yeah, Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, he didn't host it. He was on the show.
He was one of the regulars?
Well, he became a regular, yeah.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. I mean, he was not a cast member. He was just He was on the show like four or five times.
Who was the second host?
Second host. Oh man. I can't remember.
Poor person's always like...
It might be Paul Simon might be the second host, and I know that Buck Henry hosted like 800
times. A lot of them, yeah.
I remember. That was a really funny show this weekend. They totally made up for last week. Last week's SNL was terrible.
Larry's one was terrible.
But the Tiffany Haddish was great. Tiffany Haddish is hilarious.
So I watched some of the Larry David one, and I love Larry David. I mean, he's like one of my favorites.
Every Monday morning when I get home, I watch Curb. Every Monday morning.
Yeah.